Welcome, everyone, and thanks for being with me this next hour. You are listening to the Friday Morning Show with C.A. Brooks, Fridays on 1-2 Radio, changing the way we think about and experience our world. Today is February 17th, 2017. The Friday Morning Show is a new slot for 1-2 Radio, and currently, Mark Husson and I are kind of playing tag because we're sharing this spot. He does the show one week, and I do it the next. And for my turn, I like to talk about A Course in Miracles. So on today's show, I am happy to welcome back writer, web designer, and ACIM teacher Bruce Rawls. I feel like Bruce and I have some catching up to do because we haven't done a show together since last October. So I'm excited to see where the discussion will take us. And speaking of discussion, you can join us. I know that many of you know that, fans of 1-2 Radio. You recognize that we have a private page over on Facebook. So if you want to join us over there and ask questions or make comments, we'd love to see you do that. And the way that you get there, if you haven't ever been before, is you go to the 1-2radio.com website. And on that left side of the page, you're going to see a word that says chat. And when you click that link, you will be automatically redirected over to Facebook. And if you haven't ever been in the room before, just ask to come in. And our producer, Scott Weaver, is going to be there, and he's going to let you in. So it's going to be great. So today, I do have Bruce with me today, and I'm so excited to just see what's going on. And in fact, when he and I were kind of talking about, well, what should be our topic today? And we talked about the idea that we hadn't talked for a while. So I kind of wanted to know from Bruce, well, what's going on in your life in terms of how are you practicing A Course in Miracles? What's coming up for you? Or, you know, what's kind of on your plate? So we don't have a specific topic. We're just going to go where the Spirit moves us. So welcome, Bruce. Thanks for being here this morning.
Well, thanks, CA. It's always a joy and a delight to converse. And like you say, we haven't done this for a few months, so it's kind of fun to catch up.
So. Yeah. And so, you know, you were just full of ideas. And even right before we started, you're like, what about this and what about this? So I'm going to let you suggest what you would like to talk about. And by the way, if you want to, you can also go over to that private group on Facebook. I will try to keep an eye on it because that way, if somebody does have a question or a comment, we can include it in the discussion. But if you want to go over there and keep track of it, you can do that too.
Sounds good. Actually, since you suggested that, one of the things that I've been doing again this year is the workbook lessons. And I've kind of lost track of how many times I've done them, but I find that each going through just deepens my appreciation and hopefully understanding of the principles in A Course in Miracles. And so today's, since we're recording this on February 17th, today's daily lesson is There's Nothing to Fear. It's actually one of the shorter ones in the early ones where they start getting longer and longer and, you know,
right,
more and more details. And this is actually only three paragraphs. So I thought, well, maybe we could read this one, and just talk about that as a jumping off point.
Well, and you know, that is kind of funny because truthfully, I just read this about 10 minutes before we went on the air. And, you know, and I'm not redoing all the workbook lessons, but some days I do just choose whatever the lesson is. Uh-huh. And I thought it was, I mean, truthfully, it was so incredibly timely with what's going on in my life. So we're on the same page, Bruce.
Well, I think so. And well, I think it's because we have the same teacher and we all have that same.
We're all connected.
I mean, that could have been as, do you ever watch Fawlty Towers?
You know what? I haven't, but I've heard of it.
Oh gosh. There's one of the characters, it was a husband wife team that were always bickering and she would say, oh, kind of a lesson in the bleeding obvious or something like that anyway, but it was basically, you know, but that's really what this curriculum is. It's really the obvious that we tend to just say, yeah, later. Sure. I'll deal with that. But I think this workbook lesson summarizes it very nicely. And to kind of tie it into our kind of on-air conversation, we talked about how one of the ideas that Ken Wapnick put out several years ago when he was still around and in the flesh, so to speak, was that, you know, we really can begin to generalize and make, as he put it, from the course, make this year different by making it all the same. And when we,
yes,
we do that, we start to realize, you know, the principles don't change. The circumstances seem to change. I mean, we may have a new administration. In my case, I've moved a couple of times in the last few months, only because I was briefly back in Colorado after living in California for a year. And then my wife and I just moved to the Oregon coast a couple months ago.
Yeah, those are big moves.
But on the surface, things seem to be different, but it's still the same stuff. It's still the same practice of mindfulness. The characters may be different, the surroundings, but the particulars of the projections that my mind seems to be doing, it's all part of the propaganda.
Right.
of ego's thinking of, well, now it's different. You know, it's that carrot and the stick kind of thing. But the ego is fundamentally a thought system of fear. It's, you know, or as Kim puts it, the unholy trinity of sin, guilt, and fear, thinking that somehow we messed up perfect oneness and shattered it, broke it, you know, defaced it, damaged it, whatever. And as a result, we now, in the ego's use of now have this unconscious guilt. And it's irreconcilable, and so the only thing that's left to anticipate in terms of the egos, you know, if we're really looking at the ego honestly, is fear. And that's just, you know, it's just crazy making. It just is totally crazy making. But that's the only, song in the ego's hymn book is let's make this seemingly separate person crazy.
Right.
Right. Yeah. So how about if we read that lesson?
Sure.
Together?
Do you want to start?
Sure, sure. This is lesson 48 from the workbook of A Course in Miracles. And it's, the title is There's Nothing to Fear. And the first paragraph goes, the idea for today simply states a fact. It is not a fact to those who believe in illusions, but illusions are not facts. Alternative or otherwise.
Right.
In truth, there is nothing to fear. It is very easy to recognize this, but it is very difficult to recognize it for those who want illusions to be true. And there's where that willingness comes in, the wanting. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to comment on that first paragraph?
No, I think we can go on, but I mean, I agree with you, you know, and in fact, just that phrase that is floating around alternative facts, you know.
I couldn't help putting
okay.
that. And what crossed my mind the other day is, well, several recent days, when that phrase first surfaced in the media, it was like, well, that's really a microcosm of the ego's macrocosm. The alternative fact for, or the alternative reality of the ego is a massive dream that is a fearful dream. And that's just, it's just silly, but we don't usually think of it that way. We take it very seriously. We take our illusions very seriously because we made them up. And by golly, we have ownership of that and we're proud of that ownership. And that's that identity issue the authority problem, as the Course calls it, that none of us really want to let go of. And I think Ken Wapnick addresses that so beautifully in so much of his work that, you know, we need to really look honestly at why and how we want to maintain, our separate self, because we think we're getting mileage from it. We honestly believe that. Not that it's true, but.
Yeah. And you know, you said, do you want to comment on this? And I said, no, but I guess actually I do.
Good.
Because, you know, as you're talking about it, and that last sentence is so important, you know, that it's very difficult to recognize it for those who want the illusions to be true.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not that we think our belief system is an illusion, but it is true that we put incredible energy into proving what we want to be true. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to the point where, and psychologists have told us this for years, and because The Course in Miracles tends to be very psychological, it mm-hmm. follows some of those lines, but we literally see what we want to see. And mm-hmm. so often we think we're open-minded. I mean, and I'm talking about myself here. think I'm open-minded, but the truth is I've already made up my mind about something, and now I'm going to go out and hear every single thing that's going to prove to me that's true. And if I hear something that's contrary, you know, sometimes I would literally say, somebody would say later, did you hear that? I'd go, no, you know, because it's like, I didn't hear it. Uh-huh. I did not hear it. And so, you know, that's why this is so wonderful, because if we can even stop and say, what is it that we want to be true? Mm-hmm. You know, what do we want to be true? And some of the people that have been listening to me, and I don't want to go into all the details, but truthfully, the world has been very challenging to me lately. And one of those things is because, you know, I don't like feeling dependent. And I've had a furnace that has only been working intermittently over the last 2 months.
Oh, my.
I have had people come out as many as 9 times. And every time they leave, they charge me and say, the furnace is working. Well, that's not true. And so now we're getting into the territory where I've spent enough money, I probably could have almost gotten a new furnace. And so I so badly want to make myself a victim. You know, it's like, I did nothing wrong. All I'm doing is calling you and asking you to fix the furnace. And so, you know, I kind of, that's it. I think about this, and even when I pulled this out, there is nothing to fear, because I recognize that it's so easy to fall back into that. I am the victim here. And I have been so challenged over the last 2 weeks dealing back and forth, because finally with the company, I just said, look, the furnace isn't fixed, I still don't have heat, and you have a lot of my money. And so I want some of it back.
Yeah.
And so at first they said, yeah, and I said, I'll walk away if you'll just give me some of the money back. And they said, okay. And then they turned around and said, nope, we're not going to give you any of the money back. And so at first, I mean, I literally, you know, wrote them this scathing email, you know. And, you know, I even said, do you want to get into a pissing contest with me? You know? And, but here's what happened. I didn't send it because I know better than that. So over the course of a couple of days, I kept rereading the email, and it kind of comes back to this. What is it that you want to be true? Because I kept asking myself, what is it that you want to be true in this situation? Do you want it to be true that you're an angry consumer? Do you want it to be true that you're a victim? You know, what is it that you want to be true? But, you know, the other thing I was able to do, but it took time, is turn it around and say, from their perspective, what is it that they want? Now, obviously, they want to keep their money. But I think it also had to do with reputation. You know, they were frustrated that I saw them in such a negative light. And, I mean, it's more complicated than that. But once again, by really thinking about it and thinking about what is it they want, you know, what is it they would like to see happen in this situation, or what is their need? And their need partially was for me to not get on the internet and write a bunch of bad stuff, I think. But I was asking myself a version of that is, what is it that you want to be true in this situation? And I mean, I'm still not totally at peace with it, but it was amazing how just giving myself a few days and just consciously pulling myself back and saying, really, do you just want to be a victim? And do you want to like call all your friends and family and tell them what a victim you are? Is that what you want? Is that what you want your life to be? And it's like, no. So, you know, that willingness that what is it you want to be true is a big deal.
Yeah.
You know, it's a really big deal.
Yeah. And on a pragmatic note, I, in a past life, late 70s, early 80s kind of time frame, I was a TV repairman. I know, so I've been on both sides, right? I know about intermittents, and they're awful. I mean, that's the last thing you'd want to try to fix, because inevitably you show up to a customer's, door and it doesn't act up, and you try
right.
Everything you can do to make it act up. We even have, I remember cans of tuner freeze back in the old days when there were mechanical tuners and you clunk, clunk, clunk where you change channels. Mm-hmm. And it was switching a ganged rotary switch, and those mechanical contacts would get dirty, especially if you were in a house with a smoker, and it was just a mess. You know, you could take the back off the set and it would just be caked with black dust and magnetized to the high voltage electronics. Anyway, but that's an aside. But the intermittent, though, I think is a good example of how it is a dualistic in time thought system, that the ego basically gives us little enticements, you know, little carrots on a stick thing, where we get to maybe not actually taste, but sniff the carrot when the string moves, you know, as its pendulum wags back and forth in front of our face. We get maybe a tiny little nibble or a sniff, or mostly, you know, but we don't really get the full experience that we want. And I think that's the ego's bait and switch, is, well, you know, if you just keep trudging on, or if you just move to another state, if you just change jobs, if you change the people you live with, are married to, work with, you know, the websites you visit, the channels you watch on TV, that, you know, yada, yada. It's this endless list of stuff that's always this, if you do this, then you'll get that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But it's all predicated on the idea that there's something in the world that's going to make us happy. It's all, you know, based on the assumption that our projections somehow are causal, and first of all, that they're not projections, they're actually an objective reality.
Yes. And even if they're alternative facts.
right. but the world is an alternative fact, you know.
Yes,
that's one of the more challenging lessons in farther on in the workbook, is, you know, there is no world. This is the central thought the Course attempts to teach, you know, and then it immediately says, you know, you probably aren't going to, I'm paraphrasing greatly, of course, you know, you're probably not going to be ready to accept this, but, you know, over time, just kind of let that sink in and, you know, take little bits and pieces of it as you're ready. That I think is what allows us to have a gradually growing and consistency smile, where we did with this experience. You just like, is this really the identity I want? Do I want to really be a consumer, victim and have that as my identity? Well, no, you can still voice your concerns and your issues without, you know, ranting and raving and calling names and all that kind of stuff. But it's not so much whether that's done in a behavior level. It's internally. Am I making someone else wrong? Am I wanting to be right more than happy? You know, and that, all that kind of stuff.
And not to mention disturbing your peace, which, yeah, you know, yeah, this lesson talks about. It's like, is that how I want to feel?
Mm-hmm.
Just totally not peaceful.
Right.
Totally ranting and raving and angry.
You know, I want peace instead of this? Yeah.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Am I really upset for the reason I think?
Well, and you know, that's the other thing that, you know, becomes such a challenge, uh-huh, is that you want to, in the face of something happening, like whether or not, let's say it's a medical crisis, or let's say it's, you know, the furnace not working, I want to make it as an exception so that, oh yeah, the Course in Miracles works on everything else, but this is an exception. This is a big deal. And, you know, trying to make a hierarchy of illusions. Yep. Some illusions are bigger and more important and harder to get rid of than others. Now, experientially, it does feel that way. Uh-huh. But once again, kind of going back to this lesson, I think what I thought was such synchronicity is in this next paragraph. In fact, let me read this next paragraph.
Sure, please do.
It says, today's practice periods will be very short, very simple, and very frequent. Merely repeat the idea as often as possible. And of course, the idea is there is nothing to fear. You can use it with your eyes open at any time and in any situation. It is strongly recommended, however, that you take a minute or so whenever possible to close your eyes and repeat the idea slowly to yourself several times. It is particularly important that you use the idea immediately should anything disturb your peace. Well, what I was doing is basically going, I'll do that later. I'll do that later, because right now I have to deal with this crisis. You know, this is an exception. This is different. And I think I was struck by this too, because so often in a course, we do the daily lessons, but if in anything, they're encouraging us not to use them as affirmations.
Right, right.
You know, and I will admit, I certainly years ago went through a whole stage of using affirmations. Mm-hmm. And for me, I liked them, but I didn't think they changed anything. You know, ultimately I realized that if my mindset wasn't different, it didn't matter how many times I said that. But in this past week or so, I noticed how many times I was not feeling peaceful. And one morning I just, you know, literally I woke up and I said, okay, Jesus, God, Holy Spirit, whatever, you got to kick my butt. I can't do this. I am like struggling. You know, I just cannot get over this. And the word increase came into my head. And all of a sudden I said, okay, today I'm going to increase the number of times that I ask for help. I'm going to increase the number of times that I remember I'm not doing this alone. I'm going to increase the number of times that I can literally stop and go back to that instead of going off on my own tangent. And I'll tell you what, it made all the difference in the world. It made all the difference in the world to me. And in a sense, yes, it was an affirmation, but it was very much like this. It's like just coming back that many times and going, yeah, I'm going to increase the number of times today that I remember I'm not doing this by myself. And so when I opened this lesson, it said, yeah, do it as many times as you want during the day. Remember, say, there is nothing to fear. Mm-hmm. And because, you know, that is one of the things about A Course in Miracles, especially about forgiveness, is that I've never been good at forgiveness, ever. And, you know, I guess a lot of people aren't, because we continually see it as, you did something wrong and now I have to forgive you. I have to overlook it. Whereas in this, when I truly practice, like, okay, you're going to have to show me another way to see this, it is almost like, hate to use the word, but magic. All of a sudden, I do see another way. I do feel what they're feeling. Or I do, you know, the anger does leave. I do feel peace of mind. And it's just, it's an amazing phenomena that the minute you open up yourself to saying, this illusion isn't working for me, I don't like it, this isn't the one I want, guess what? You will be shown another way.
Yeah, you might have even call it a miracle.
Yes, it's not magic, it's a miracle.
Exactly, yeah. But, you know, not that the jargon is important, but that feel, like you say, the feeling that suddenly, wow, I do have another choice here. And there is a real alternative that I can choose whenever I want. And the whenever becomes more and more frequent, you know, with practice, and we remember to even consider that we have that option more frequently the more we practice it. And I think that's part of the development of trust that the manual in the back of the book suggests that you know, we, as you were pointing out moments ago, that we do need to cultivate that relationship with our inner kindness teacher. As you were saying that, I kind of had this vision of, you know, the Course uses, you know, the Holy Spirit and Jesus as the kind of the two main metaphors for that principle of the thought that we took with us into the dream that leads us out of the metaphoric darkness of ego's thought system. What occurred to me was kind of I actually had a nocturnal dream many years ago where I was traveling in the mountains and with all these hooded figures, and I was, you know, basically shown a sort of a reenactment of you know, my own mortality. And but then I realized that, but then the figure that was at the bottom of this cliff that had, you know, essentially just done a swan dive, it was my old self, that this was no longer what I was, even in the dream at that point. And then by the time we got to the top of the, of, you know, right, walking along this ridge, we ascended this, you know, mountain, and the sun came out, and all these hooded figures that had accompanied me in this dark, somber mood, were all the people I'd known. And it was kind of this, it was a very profound dream. In fact, it shook me in a positive way so much that I actually took the day off to kind of process it. I remember this was like 20 some odd years, or actually more like 30 some odd years ago now, kind of think of it. Back in the mid 80s when I first started reading the Course. And anyway, it was just kind of that vision of what you were saying, and it would just kind of remind me, it was like, well, that help really isn't a specific person, but it's really everyone and everything. And I think that's, again, back to the generalization. The more we can generalize and remember that practice and repetition is essential, that everything and everyone becomes our best friend and our savior and our teacher. And ultimately, we learn to see everyone and everything as that and experience tremendous gratitude. But that's not where we start out. We need to, you know, kind of usually pick small, easy examples and work up to it. But I think that can be a help when we realize that if you just can click in once or twice every so often and you say, well, I do actually feel better when I let go of my need to be right, my compulsive identification with the circumstances and the situations that I think are the problem and the thought system that, you know, suggests that that should be a problem, which is really the cause of our suffering. And then we realize, wow, I don't have to choose that thought system anymore. I don't have to go there. Mm-hmm. And the last phrase, you know, I'll just read the last sentence again. It is particularly important that you use the idea immediately should anything disturb your peace of mind. And again, mind is the whole premise of the course. Ken Wapnick says this is always and only a course about the mind, and it's never about behavior, and that's where we get into, you know, the trap of level confusion, thinking that, well, if I change the circumstances, if I change the effect, then that should change the cause, right? Well, no.
Right. Well, yeah, and I mean, along the same lines, it doesn't mean that if I have peace of mind that the furnace is going to work.
Right, you know? Right.
It doesn't mean that. However, I would say with peace of mind, I'm more clearly able, I think, to make good decisions.
Absolutely.
Maybe how this problem could be solved.
Yeah. And I think it gives it – you know, on a very pragmatic level, it widens the scope of choices.
Yes.
Tremendously, because if we're upset with something and we're, you know, like tunnel vision on, well, it's got to be this way, and or these solutions are the only ones that are likely to work, you know, we're really narrowing the scope of possibilities in that thought system, that don't have to be narrowed. You know, there can mm-hmm. be things that occur that, oh, well, what if I did that? And I think that's where some of those flashes of insight come, where sometimes you hear the phrase, if we just walk away from it for a while, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think usually that, you know, can be a trigger. Again, it's not about behavior, but that thought process of just saying, let it go for a moment. And then that letting go, I think, is a metaphor for, you know, choosing once again, just saying, I could see peace instead of this. You know, and I'm not upset for the reason that appears to be outside me. It's really something that I've chosen, and I could choose against that self-abuse, that masochism.
Yes. Well, and, you know, I recognized that, too, as I was going through this process, mm-hmm. that what was also really partially at the root of what was bugging me is that it felt like an old pattern.
Yeah.
And it's like, I thought, you've overcome that. You've moved so far beyond that. How come this pattern is reemerging again? And that alone made me mad. You know, it's like, I don't want to do this pattern anymore. And right. I think that's where though it kind of came in and go, okay, you don't have to do the pattern anymore.
Yeah.
Yes, the circumstances look similar. Like, no, this time you could choose to do this differently. So quit being mad that it looks like an old pattern and get on with it, you know?
Right. And that's a good reminder that, you know, the ego thought system, just as the Holy Spirit's thought system, never goes away. They're always there 100% 24/7, 365 or 366 on leap years.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that it's just a reminder that we always have a choice between those two diametrically opposed thought systems, and only one of them is real.
Yes.
And that decision-making faculty is something everyone has all the time. And that alone frustrates the hell out of our egos, but it simultaneously inspires what we really are.
Yes. Yeah. It's amazing. So you want to read the last paragraph in lesson 48?
Sure. The presence of fear is a sure sign that you are trusting in your own strength, and that ties into the previous lesson 47. The awareness that there is nothing to fear shows that somewhere in your mind, though not necessarily in a place you recognize as yet, you have remembered God and let his strength take the place of your weakness. The instant you are willing to do this, there is indeed nothing to fear. And that gets back to the trust, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
The willingness to trust that there's an awareness, you know, whether we think of it as a a metaphysical figure in history, such as Jesus or Buddha or some saint that we admire, or some person in contemporary our contemporary dream here in space time that we find, you know, for example, Ken Wapnick is one of mine, and who doesn't appear to be physically present, but he's very present in my mind quite a bit.
Yeah, me too.
Listen to his audios and watch his videos, and Artin and Perso and Gary's writings. It doesn't matter the who, but I think it could be the more we generalize, we can realize it's really everyone provides us with that feedback mechanism to show us the contents of our minds, and so we're really not just this past month or so when we have a change of administration. We could talk about that. Do we have a stellar example? But always we have a perfect, mathematically precise, tailor-made, custom crafted feedback mechanism that shows us the unconscious mind in all of its splendor or glory, depending on which thought system we're looking at, and an opportunity to choose.
So. Yes. Yeah. Like I said, this week for me, it's just been filled with so many lessons that I'm just like, every day I wake up now and I'm going, okay, what's it going to be today? But that's what I've come to is, like I said, it's been a great learning experience by just saying, I'm going to increase the amount of time that I remember I don't have to do it this way.
Yeah.
I'm going to increase that, and as simple as that, and I'm going to let that come into my mind as many times as I can and see what happens. And it hasn't necessarily changed the circumstances, but it's changed how I felt about them.
Exactly.
And whether or not I felt like a victim to it.
Yeah, that's the real freedom, isn't it? The victimhood is really just solidly at the bottom rung of the ladder of ego's descent into hell, as the Course would put it. Using again a religious metaphor to describe in the ego's own assessment, what it thinks of the world. That's the insanity of the ego, is that it promises us heaven, but in the maladaptive solution to a non-existent problem, it says, well, if you stick with me, I'll lead you out of this. But it never works. It's like a dysfunctional, crew that really has never wanted, the problems to be solved, and actively, populates its team with characters that really want to destroy peace rather than to affirm it. And I think that's, we can see symbols within us and all around us of that thought system and realize that is just a perfect opportunity to look at, whenever anything that disturbs our peace comes up, whether it's something we see on TV, read in the newspaper, for those who use treeware or anywhere, whether it's, just a conversation in a grocery store someone we see on the road when we're driving, or doesn't matter. It just any circumstance, any situation is fair game for reinterpretation and letting go of the misinterpretation of the ego's, constant fear. And it takes so many disguises.
Fear, oh my God, yes.
Fear can be disguised in so many things. But the clue I think that's so helpful is just whenever you're upset, whenever there's anything that isn't completely peaceful, that's the sign that we're trusting in our own strength. We're trusting the ego's pretty lousy track record, honestly.
Absolutely. And when you talk about fear coming in so many shapes and sizes, like I said, this week, the last couple of weeks have just been, I think, bizarre. I'll give you another example. And, partially it's like when you go even back to that alternative facts. I mean, I'm kind of like, yeah, we live in an ego in a world of alternative facts.
Yeah.
Because I take a medication that's relatively, it's not that expensive, but it costs about $40 a month. $40 for 3 months, actually. So that's not too bad, right?
No.
So, I go to refill my prescription the other day, and it's $150. And so I look at the pharmacist and I said, what do you mean it's $150? You know, it's usually been 40. And they said, well, not anymore. And so I'm like, well, you know what? And they said, well, and she looked on this little app and she goes, it looks to me like you could get it cheaper if you went to King Soopers. And I said, well, why is that? I said, are you literally telling me not to come here anymore? Are you telling me to go to another pharmacy? And she goes, yeah, unless you want to pay $150. And so, of course, talk about an alternate reality. I'm like, really? You're encouraging me to go someplace else and buy my medication someplace else. But, and I kind of, I mean, once again, I kind of got flustered because what I realized, if you can believe this, at the same timing this happens, you know, she's telling me the medication has gone up, you know, it's going to be this expensive. And I know there's alternatives that are probably cheaper, but my doctor, if you can believe this, my doctor is quitting private practice and is going to go work with the homeless. And so this is her last day in private practice. And so this is happening like on Tuesday or Wednesday. And I'm like, really? So I have 2 days to figure this out. So I get on the internet and I check out all these, you know, prescription sites that say they'll get it cheaper. So I have the prescription sent over to King Soopers. And I walk up and I said, because, you know, they also say they don't have to honor the coupons. So I ask, will you honor this coupon? And he goes, well, yeah, we'll honor the coupon. He goes, but, you know, you've never been here before, so give me your insurance card and give me all this stuff. I said, okay. So I give it to him and I'm standing there. And he goes, oh, okay. And then anyway, he rings it up and guess how much a medication is?
$18. Oh, great.
And I was like, what? You know, did you say $1,800? And he goes, no, he goes, it's $18.46. And I was like, wait a minute, how could that possibly be? And he goes, well, you don't really need the coupon because your particular insurance will pay for this. And I said, but I've been told in the past they won't. And he goes, well, they will. It's $18. And so, but talk about alternative realities.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just like, it kind of shows you, you know, I mean, and I could have gotten all bent out of shape and once again, change of medication and everything. But just by kind of calming down and going, okay, I am going to try something else. I'm going to go over to King Soopers and just see what the deal is. I mean, I couldn't believe it. And I know that's not going to always happen. But I would still say, you know, even in that situation I just said, I'm going to increase the number of times I'm neutral. I'm going to increase the number of times that, you know, I'm going to keep my peace of mind. And sure enough, you know, because I could have easily gotten a pharmacist who didn't really care and would have just taken the coupon and said, okay, you know, $45, but not this guy. And I, you know, so that's where it kind of goes back into, you know, having more options, just having more options. I'm a calm person walking up, you know, trying to keep my peace of mind instead of going, oh my God, you wouldn't believe how terrible this has been over the last couple of days, you know? And so I get somebody who's more than willing to go, hey, let's figure this out. Let's see what price we can get for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and I wasn't even encouraging him to do that. I was just going, here's my coupon.
Right. And you perhaps know? even the initial interaction, maybe the fact that you know, you didn't fly off the handle, with the first person who said, well, you maybe should try King Soopers. Maybe that wouldn't even come up had, you know, you approached initially the conversation with a different attitude.
So. Right. They may not have even told me that.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm still actually quite shocked that they did.
Well, that was kind of very thoughtful, actually, and very helpful on the level of form. But again, you know, it's always keep bringing it back to the mind. What a great opportunity to see our minds in action in your particular circumstance, how, you know, we can could see peace instead of this. And in this case, the peace seems to have resulted in a reflection that, you know, mirrors that choice. Huh?
Mm-hmm. Well, and I tell people a story from years ago that I had bought all this furniture from, not IKEA, but I'm trying to think, it was kind of a Swedish store of some sort, but you basically have to assemble it.
Uh-huh.
And you assemble it, it's kind of an old fashioned thing because you literally have holes in the furniture and you pound in wooden pegs and that kind of thing. So it took a long time to put the furniture together and I had a little help, but then I didn't have help for the very last piece I was putting together. And it was a filing cabinet, you know, a filing drawer. And so it was more complicated. And I don't know why. I just don't think I've ever been good at geometry or spatial concepts, you know, like trying to, you know, I don't see it in my head. So 5 hours I'm trying to put this thing together. And I put it together upside down, inside out, like over and over. So the drawers don't work, you know? And finally, I was so frustrated, I just said, I just have to walk away from this. Because, of course, none of the directions are in English. They're just pictures.
Right.
And I'm somehow not able to convert those pictures into what I need to do. And so I walked out and I got some iced tea or something. And then I came back into the room and I literally said to myself, if you knew how to put this together, what would that look like? And in that moment, all of a sudden, I saw what I needed to do.
Cool.
And but it wasn't until I stopped trying to figure it out,
mm-hmm.
and I simply said, if I did know, what would it look like? And I think of that in the same way as like what you were saying, options. When we can come from a place of calm, when we can come from a place of peace, then solutions can, you know, come into our heads. And whether or not you want to consider that Holy Spirit or where that's coming from, it's rare that we can really come up with those solutions when we're not peaceful.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things that compromise that peace is the unwillingness to be inclusive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that unwillingness can take a lot of forms. Usually it's in the form of projection, which is to say, you know, we are upset with someone or something, whether it's a piece of furniture or a clerk behind a pharmacy counter, you know, or whatever. I mean, it doesn't matter the specific. If we have made up our minds, as the phrase you used earlier in this conversation, to see someone as an adversary or a problem, you know, that basically sets the stage for the outcome. And I think there's a place in the course that ties into that. So if you, it's something to the effect, I'm going to paraphrase this greatly, is, you know, if you saw not, you know, innocence in him, you won't see it in yourself, you know, and that's
right.
Very, very much paraphrased, you know, but,
mm-hmm.
but it's kind of like we put the cart before the horse, instead of the heart before the horse. And we basically, pre-assign and we're you know pre-bias ourselves going into a situation if we're not mindful and looking at, okay, well, how am I already setting myself up to have a problem before
mm-hmm.
before we even set foot in or out of a door or, you know, in or out of a conversation or whatever. We can kind of watch our mind, and I think again that's the you know, sort of the Eastern philosophical premise of the course is look at the contents of the mind, see that the contents working in isolation is false, working together with that inner kindness teacher is leading us back to the truth that we never left, and that makes all the difference.
Mm-hmm. Well, and once again, recognizing a pattern,
mm-hmm.
recognizing that this pattern, this habit is so easy because that's what I always do, but also
right.
knowing, but it always leads me to the same place, which is where I don't want to go.
Uh-huh.
So when we watch the mind, then we can go, oh, I recognize this pattern. I recognize where this street goes. But we can't do that if we want to, once again, you know, like I said, what was so clear to me is that I was willing to say, well, spirituality applies in some situations, but not others. So I'm going to deal with this myself, and then I'll go do A Course in Miracles, or I'll go do my thing, and just going, no, that's an old habit. That's an old pattern, and it never worked for you.
Uh-huh.
So in this moment, can you stop yourself from going down that street? You know, and it's difficult.
Right,
it's difficult,
right.
But you do it if you don't kind of come back and say, I need to look at my mind and recognize this pattern, you know?
Yep. And that patterns, you know, recognition is a part of that generalization. And I had to chuckle a moment ago when you said maybe it doesn't apply in this situation.
Yeah.
It's almost like, well, that's the ego's insane thinking. It's almost
yes.
like the ego says, oh, well, there's a local ordinance against peace in your neighborhood, you know?
Yeah, right.
And that's why you can't experience it. Well, no, it's just we've selectively cherry picked and hand chosen, situations that are our special, allies and foes. And because of that predisposition and prejudice, you know, those things sure enough fulfill for us just what we put into them. But we're usually not that mindful about, you know, when we go into a situation, what we're bringing, you know, the baggage we're bringing with it from the past and, you know, the legacy of the ego's blathering that is burdening our mind that we could look at and say, wait a minute. I don't need ego stinking badge.
Yeah, right.
I don't need that fake identity. I could see peace instead of this, you know, and mm-hmm. and then because of that, there is nothing to fear.
Well, and it kind of comes back to, we can get all wrapped up in all of the, you know, very detailed metaphysics of everything and figuring it out. But, mm-hmm. you know, bottom line, how's it working for you?
Yes.
You know,
yes,
we always come back to that. It's like, it, you know, I don't even have to figure out, maybe this is an old pattern or anything else. I don't have to go through those mental gymnastics. I just need to say, how's it working for you?
Yep.
Do you feel good? You don't feel good, you know?
Yeah. And I think that ties into the three R's of forgiveness, as I like to call them. The reveal, which is, you know, the recognition, that first phase where you say, wow, how's that working? Well, not so great.
Not so good.
I'm not at peace right now. You know, I must have chosen wrongly. And then with that recognition, the first R, immediately we have the opportunity to release our investment and the maladaptive solution to the non-existent problem. And that second R is the release. And then the moment we choose that release and say, okay, I'm dropping it. This is just not cutting it for me. The replacement is automatic. And that's why in the, I think it's workbook lesson 23, it says, you know, the first two steps require your involvement and participation and agreement. You know, so I'm paraphrasing as always. But the third one doesn't. Because the truth is what we are. The truth is that legion of, you know, the infinite group of friends that really is the, you know, reflected in the whole cosmos when seen aright, that is really here to help us see the contents of our mind. And when we turn it over to that thought system, wow, it's automatic, because then that just comes flooding in. That the little thin, flimsy veil, the illusion of separate interests and the illusion of difficulties, the illusion of victimhood drops. It just, because there was nothing there to it, nothing to it. It was a hologram that we wanted to be true, a belief, a dream, a movie, whatever metaphor you like, that we wanted to be true. We wished it true. And then when we realized the insanity of making that wish, it's like, wow, my willingness has shifted. And after I recognized and then released, the replacement's automatic because the truth just comes shining through.
Nice. So it's reveal.
Release.
I'm just getting stuck on that. And then replace.
And replace. Yeah. And the replace, we just get the heck out of the way.
We don't have to do that.
And it's automatic. Yeah. Cause the truth just is. And that's what we are. When we question the who, the what comes flooding in.
Mm-hmm.
And the what is all inclusive, because the what is the shared interest that we all have, that we all want to go home. We all want to return to the place in truth we never left. And so when we get the dream out of the way and we wake up, it's not like we have to, you know, spend hours and hours cleaning up the shards and the fragments of the last night's dream. You know, it's just, well, there's nothing there.
Right.
That's why the replacement is automatic and does require no effort on our part.
Great. Well, I'm glad you reminded me of that, because I think you've said that before, that thing about reveal and release and replace, but I'd forgotten it. So that's a good way to look at forgiveness. So thank you for offering that.
I like those simple, you know.
Yeah, me too.
Mnemonics, yeah. I think it helps.
Yeah. And like I said, for me, I mean, I'm really into this increase thing, you know, and like I said, there are many ways. I think that really did come from the Holy Spirit. Just increase. What are you going to increase right now in your life? Not what are you going to take away? What are you going to figure out? Just what are you going to increase?
Yep.
I'm going to increase my peace of mind. I'm going to increase the number of times that I really think about an alternative way of looking at this or whatever. And it's just, it's been a fun game for me to play this week. And I think it's really kind of saved my sanity. So yes, I love these little, once again, I guess miracles.
Yeah,
I love these miracles in our lives. So.
And that peace of mind is not a little gift, as the Course reminds us. I think it's because we are so addicted and so immersed and so identified with the ego's thought system, if we're honest with ourselves, that those little fleeting moments of peace for most people are, you know, kind of far and few between. Because we're so quick to pick up the sword of ego's battle and you know, jump back down into the battlefield of duality and say, oh, I'm fighting this, I'm fighting that. But over time, like you say, the increase can then start accumulating. And if you plotted it out, it could be, you know, like this going from 0 to 100%, as we transition from one thought system to the other, you know, one fades down. When I worked in the video industry years ago, after being a TV repairman, I worked for a company in Northern California that made video equipment for the broadcast industry. And we had these things called crossfades in the audio systems and this is true throughout the, you know, audio world. You fade one, oftentimes a system where it will fade down one audio channel while it simultaneously fades up the other. And then they're set up so that the combined volume is always the same, and it keeps that levels the same, so you don't have a little dunk or a pop or a click or whatever.
Right.
And so that's kind of what we're doing, but we're doing it sort of over a few seconds. Like sometimes you hear on between cuts on a CD or something, or you know, when one musical program fades into another, we're doing it over a lifetime or maybe multiple lifetimes. So, but we're really fading down the ego's thought system. We're turning down its blathering director's cut on our DVD.
Yeah.
and we're fading up the Holy Spirit's, track, which is really mostly a very quiet, peaceful track with occasional smiles that come through. Maybe it's sort of a multimedia track, but it really is a very gradual process most of the time. But we do that by generalizing practice, and looking at the contents of our mind and letting go of the fears moment to moment. And like you say, just increasing gradually but consistently the number of times in a given day, or a given minute for that matter, that we choose peace instead of egos.
Yeah, I love that analogy of keeping the volume the same, but increasing what you're listening to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which side are you going to allow to color your overall perception? I love that.
Yeah.
And we've only got a couple of minutes to end the show.
Wow.
So, I know, it always goes so fast. We need a couple of hours. But I want to ask you, is there anything you want to announce? Because I know you're always into some interesting things. So do you want to announce your website? Do you want to announce anything else going on for you?
Sure, you betcha. I always like to share what I've been doing on the web. And I've got a Facebook page on A Course in Miracles, and I haven't done a whole lot with that lately because I've been so busy, but the acimblog.com is the main website. And actually, since we moved here, I'm going to be giving a talk at the Unity Church in Newport, Oregon on March 12th.
Nice.
A Sunday morning about A Course in Miracles. And I just introduced myself to a little study group there that meets on Thursday mornings. And then I attend several online groups every week, study groups mostly. And I have a lot of fun with that. So I have weekly conversations with Lynn Johnson on Saturday mornings on the Paltak version of ACIM Gather. And I post those on acimblog.com. And when we, you know, have our conversations, I post those and do usually about once a month, video conversations with Susan Dugan, and once in a while with Gary Renard, and have a lot of fun with all that kind of stuff. So that's all on ACIM blog. And of course, the two sites that I always encourage people to spend time with is acim.org and facim.org, which is the Foundation for Inner Peace and the Foundation for A Course in Miracles, respectively. And those are wonderful resources that I think every student would do well to take full advantage of and express their gratitude for. So
yes, because there's just so much on it. And by the
way,
I went ahead and I did post your website in the chat room.
Oh,
so
thanks.
For those of you who are there, and by the way, those of you who are there today, thank you so much, Elizabeth and Liliana and Greg and Alicia and Mercy and Renee and April. And by the way, Mercy said that she really needs good thoughts coming, you know, her way today. So Mercy, you will be in my thoughts today, and anybody else
likewise,
who seems to be there, and just send support. We are all in this together. Even when it doesn't seem that way, we've
That's
got
right.
the choice to think of it that way. So thank you so much for being here today,
Bruce. Thank you all.
It's so great to be back on the air talking about A Course in Miracles.
Yeah, yeah, indeed. I'm looking forward to more. And thanks again, as always, CA, for all that you do. So.
Okay, well, thank you. And I also want to say thank you to Scott Weaver, who is our producer today. And also encourage you to stay tuned because we have more live programming. You know, we've been shaking up the schedule on Fridays, but we have more live programming coming up, and specifically Christine Dumaurier with The Through Line. So until next week, relax and wear loose clothes and increase the volume of the Holy Spirit in what you're listening to. You have been listening to the Friday Morning Show with C.A. Brooks and my guest, Bruce Rawls, on 1-2 Radio, where we are changing the way you think about life and spirituality.